The family, Peg's sister said, with some understatement, felt the death certificate was in error. Their lawyer was a man named O'Meara. A single hearing was held in 1930, but nothing ever came of it. Perhaps O'Meara ran into the same trouble as George Weeks. No one would help us, remembered Peg's sister Jean. No one was willing to do anything about it, her niece Darlene went on. I don't think any of the attorneys wanted to take on the company. My family felt like they couldn't get any help from anywhere. They felt like they couldn't be heard, that it didn't matter. Jean added, My dad said at the end, You can't beat them. There's no sense in trying. My grandfather pretty much gave up, conceded Darlene, after he realized Peg was gone and there was nothing he could do to fight the company. Forget it, Michael Looney would say bitterly. It's not worth going through this kind of mess. There was nothing he could do. There was nothing the doctors could do either for Mary Vicini Tonielli. She had quit Radium Dial when she became sick. She had sciatica, she thought, but when she prodded gingerly at her back, she realized she had some kind of lump on her spine. The doctor said it was a sarcoma, Mary's brother Alphonse later recalled. Mary had had an operation on it in the fall of 1929, but 16 weeks on she was no better. In fact, Alphonse revealed, she suffered like a dog for 4 months. There was never any more peace for her. On 22nd of February 1930, Mary Tonielli died. She was 21. Her husband of less than 2 years, Joseph, buried her in the Ottawa Avenue Cemetery. We thought it was radium poisoning, said Alphonse bleakly. But her husband and the old people didn't investigate. They felt so bad about her death. Chapter 37. Orange, New Jersey, 1930. Catherine Shaw placed her cane gingerly on the low step in front of her. She could now walk only with the aid of a cane or crutches. She had been forced to return to Newark, having spent large sums trying to regain her health. She was now entirely dependent on her $600 annuity, but it didn't provide enough money for a rural residence. She hated being back in the city, where she felt her health declined. She started up the low step, but slipped and came down hard upon her knee. It would have been painful for anyone, but Catherine was a radium girl. Her bones were as fragile as china. She felt the bone fracture, but when Dr. Humphreys examined her x-rays, he had worse news to tell her than the broken bone. Catherine Sharp had a sarcoma of the knee. She was admitted to hospital for 10 long weeks while they treated it with x-rays. It seemed to reduce the swelling, but Catherine was utterly demoralized. Encased in plaster for months, she was eventually told that the bone didn't knit the way it should and that, from now on, she would have to wear a metal brace. A lump came into my throat, Catherine recalled, as the doctor fastened on my leg the strange contrivance. I cried a little bit, but my faith consoled me. Despite the consolation of her faith, however, she found her prognosis profoundly depressing. That old cinereel from years gone by started up again in her mind, now with an ever-growing cast of ghost girls. Where Catherine had once gained relief from being in the sunshine, now, she said, she was having difficulty with the light and sun up here on the roof. My head, she stammered, had me full of fears. Couldn't tell if it was mental or real. I couldn't stand the light in my eyes, was a wreck by 4 p.m. Perhaps all this was why she began to develop what she called this craving of alcohol of mine. The committee of doctors was, as ever, on hand to help, but Catherine now refused the treatments Ewing and Craver suggested. They say you do not know a person, she wrote assertively, until you have lived with them. I have lived with radium 10 years now, and I think I ought to know a little bit about it. So far as the suggested treatment, I think it's all bosh. She would not kowtow to their demands.